Meetings are on the roll call be dispensed with, and the sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye. All opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The sergeant of arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the pastor Kevin Schill from Grace United Methodist Church in Burnsville. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Great and gracious God of mercy, justice, and love, source of all life, whose very nature is revealed in the beauty of creation and the diversity of your people, though our expressions and understandings may differ, your call to compassion, justice, and full life for all people remains constant. Lord, we give thanks for the gift of this day and all that it holds. In both its blessings and its challenges, help us to be open to your presence and how and where your Spirit is already moving and guiding. But Lord, even as we consider the important issues of this day, our hearts and our minds are with your people, our own sisters and brothers in Boston. We pray for the victims of yesterday's senseless tragedy. We ask that you be with those who now mourn the death of their loved ones, and with those who must begin the long process of healing. And yet, God, in the midst of all of this, there is work to be done. And we pray for this legislative body and for each of its members, their families, their communities, and whatever needs or concerns may be in each of their lives. They have been called as servants from among your people to truly listen and faithfully represent the diverse voices and perspectives of all the people of this great state. We give thanks for their commitment and compassion. The task before these senators is indeed daunting because the issues are complex, and at the heart of every proposal, discussion, and debate are the lives, needs, and concerns of your beloved people. Lord, may your blessings be upon this great state of Minnesota, upon its leaders, its institutions, and especially its people. Help all who are privileged to be a part of this great democratic process to be ever mindful of the sacred trust that whatever issues may come to the floor of this chamber or in hearings, committees, or caucuses, the integrity of your creation and the well-being of the most vulnerable and marginalized of your people are held paramount. Holy One, bless this Senate and all that comes before it. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
The secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fischbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move to the second order of business, executive and official communications. Please make note of those. Third order of business, messages from the House. The secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 729 and 1069, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
We move to the fifth order of business. To the fourth order of business, first reading of House bills.
House File Number 729, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for jobs and economic development.
House File 729 will be referred to the Committee on Finance.
House File Number 1069, a bill for an act relating to state government ratifying labor agreements and compensation plans.
House File 1069 will be referred to the Committee on Finance. Now we move to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to Joint Rule 2.03.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. The eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills will be referred as indicated, including Senate File 1607, which will be referred to the Committee on Finance, and will be read by the Secretary.
Senator Tomasoni introduces Senate File Number 1607, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment, natural resources, agriculture, commerce, energy, jobs, and economic development, etc.
First reading. The ninth order of business, this is an author's motion. All those in favor of the author's motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I'm going to move a recess of the Senate for about 1 hour. The majority is going to caucus in room 318.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate is in recess. I apologize. Senator Hahn.
Madam President, our caucus will be in room 107. Could I ask the Majority Leader, I understand that the Finance Committee is still meeting. Are they going to continue to meet while we are in caucus?
Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Hahn, I understand they're going to recess and come back later tonight.
All right, the Senate is in recess.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Bach.
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk.
Okay, the first bill under consideration this afternoon will be number 176 on general orders, Senate File 671, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I'm pleased to present to you the Omnibus Judiciary Budget Bill. If I can say the name of it, then maybe I can tell you the details of what's in it. This is a bill that passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee on a unanimous roll call vote. It's a good bipartisan bill that funds our court system. It funds the Department of Corrections, which is the state prisons and the probation system throughout the state of Minnesota, as well as a number of other groups, including the public defenders and the civil legal services. I'm going to run through the key points of the different budget provisions for you. I'm going to note that we have kept this bill almost devoid of policy provisions. It's a straight budget bill. In the Senate bill here, we have no fee increases or other funding mechanisms. It's straight out of the general fund and a very small portion out of a special revenue fund. Members, throughout the agency provisions in terms of their basic employee salary and health insurance provisions, we've adopted the governor's recommendations for the base budgets. So I will highlight for you the differences in some of the other lines in each of the budgets. Contained within the Supreme Court appropriation There's the judge's salary increase. This is adopting the recommendation of the Compensation Council for an increase that they've not had a salary increase since 2008. So this adopts the Compensation Council's recommendations. We are also carrying within the bill the state's share of the judge's pension provisions, which I understand is the case right now anyway. The pension funding provisions are salted throughout the different agency budget bills, and that's contained in ours as well. There are a couple of provisions relating to the non-controversial reduction in gun violence bills that are contained in this budget bill as well. And the provisions I'll highlight for you right now in the Supreme Court's line involve identifying and putting in proper format the conviction databases and the mental health civil commitment databases so that the existing reach of the background checks can be conducted on databases that are complete with regard to their information. Right now, not all of the information has been reported to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, where the existing background checks are conducted, and that's because the data is not in the proper electronic format, it's not aggregated or integrated properly, and in the case of civil commitment data, it simply is not in any form to be able to report it. So this will reach back to 1994 for the civil commitment data and put it in a position to comply with requirements to report those to the NICS system. The next category of funding here is in civil legal services. This includes additional funding to reduce the caseload for them. Right now, they're able to serve about one out of every three people that comes in their door and qualifies financially for their services. They have been cut repeatedly over the years. This year, we're able to reverse that trend and give some additional funding so they can serve more of their clients. In connection with that is the one minor policy provision in the bill. We are deleting the language that restricts the civil legal services to serving their clients in connection with federal cases or federal court or federal law. So they are currently under that restriction. That was a rider in the appropriation bill 2 years ago, and so arguably by its own terms it expires anyway. It's not in statute, but just for clarification, we're deleting that rider language as well. The Court of Appeals and District Courts are funded in accordance with the employees and judges provisions in the Supreme Court as well. If you turn to page 2 on your bill, the Guardian Ad Litem Board, we're funding at the governor's recommended levels. The tax court has a couple of interesting additions. It has all the governor's funding in there. We'll be adding two law clerks. This is a court that, with three judges, they handle about 5,000 cases a year. So they are a very efficient court, but in order to properly handle their workload, they need two additional law clerks. They need some additional continuing legal education, some Westlaw access, which is a computer-based legal research system, and they have some funding in here for replacement and operation and maintenance of an antiquated case management computer system. In fact, they'll be using some salary savings from some vacancies on the court to purchase an updated system, but we provide $50,000 for ongoing operations and maintenance. The Uniform Laws Commission, pay up the back dues that have been owing over the last three or so years, and we fund at the governor's level so that they can attend their national meetings without digging into their own pockets. And we do a good job of utilizing the benefit of the research and suggestions from the Uniform Law Commission when we make statutory changes here in Minnesota. Board of Judicial Standards is at the governor's appropriation level. In addition, and as is customary, we are paying for the costs of outside investigators
that were used to investigate based on the number of complaints and the complexity of the cases that they had to deal with in the last biennium. Board of Public Defense, we are funding again at the governor's level for their basic employee salary and health insurance provisions. In addition to that, we have additional funding in there for caseload reduction. The public defender system, as it has been for a number of years now, is overworked, overburdened. They have some of the highest caseloads in the country, and they need some additional lawyers so that they can provide these constitutionally mandated defense services to defendants. This will help the courts, the prosecutors, the judges, the clerks, all those in the court system be more efficient because they won't have to wait around as long for the public defenders to show up to handle those cases. An interesting line in this provision of the budget also is we have separated out funding for the information technology upgrades that they need to be able to evaluate the form of the technology, the evidence that they're receiving from the prosecutors. Currently, they're having difficulty even opening the CDs and DVDs that are provided. Peace Officers, Standard and Training Board, we add $200,000 for the biennium to supplement the police training budgets, which have been cut over the last several funding cycles as well. Private Detective Board is funded at the governor's recommendation. The Human Rights Department is funded also at the governor's recommendation. This includes two additional compliance officers because a large part of what the department does is assist businesses in complying with the human rights statutes and the requirements relating to contracting, public contracts. We have two large public projects going on right now, the St. Croix River Bridge and the Vikings and People's Stadium. With those large contracts come the increasing need to review many subcontracts as well. So we funded the positions to do that, to assist the businesses in complying with the law. The Department of Corrections is the largest single item in our budget. In addition to maintaining the governor's position on the base funding for the institution, which, by the way, is at a 4% vacancy rate, twice what they prefer to have, but one which they have said that they are able to maintain for the next 2 years, a very conservative budgeting approach on the part of the agency. We are in a position this year to add funding for 100 additional chemical dependency treatment beds. Members, about 90% of the inmates in our corrections system are chemically dependent. About 70% of their crimes are related to that chemical dependency. So if they come in chemically dependent without treatment, they're going to leave chemically dependent and pose a continuing and increased risk to the public safety. So if we can fund additional chemical dependency treatment beds, we will see a reduction in recidivism rates. And this is evidence-based data studies both in Minnesota and in other states as well. Senator Cohn's bill to reinstate a mandatory 3-year prison sentence for certain repeat sex offenders had a bed impact, so we fund that as well. There's a provision out of the Senate File 235, the gun violence reduction bill, which has a bed impact as well. That's the expansion of the offenses which make a person ineligible to possess a firearm. We add felony strangulation, felony domestic assault, and felony fifth-degree assault to the list of violent offenses that make a person ineligible to possess a firearm. There's a small bed impact which is funded in this bill also. There's a savings in the bill that is booked from Senator Hayden's early release for nonviolent drug offenders provisions. These certain qualifying offenders, if they go through the chemical dependency treatment while in custody, they can get released early, and that frees up some beds and saves some funding. There's a very substantial savings in this bill, relating to Medicaid savings for health care provided to correctional facility inmates when they leave the facility to go inpatient to a hospital for services, for treatment. Under current law, when that happens, the State Department of Corrections is paying an undiscounted full rate of service. Because of some work by Senator Lori and changes in the federal health care law, we are now in a position to have the in-custody inmates covered by Medicaid, or medical assistance in Minnesota, when they go out of custody to an inpatient treatment facility. That results in a savings overall of about $6.9 million. So this is a very beneficial savings for the taxpayers of Minnesota. Some of that funding is picked up by the federal government. Some of that funding was to have been picked up by the counties, which will also realize substantial savings, but not complete savings. And so with the savings that the state realizes, we will pick up the costs to the counties, so they will see a reduction in their expenses resulting from this. The expenses relating to the Department of Human Services for making this happen are also paid for by the savings in the Department of Corrections, along with some medical release planners to implement it. The remaining savings allow us to pay for another item in the budget, which I'll get to in the next line. I can refer to you under Community Services, the Community Corrections Act subsidies, and the County Probation Officer subsidies. These are the probation officers that monitor the those who are convicted of crimes after they've committed or served their sentence and they're released back into the community. They did not have a funding increase, even at an inflationary increase in the DOC budget or elsewhere in the governor's budget. Because of the savings to the program, we are able to provide funding here. This will also serve to relieve a substantial burden that would otherwise have been carried by the counties. And this has savings in this biennium of or additional savings of just about exactly $4 million in effect relief to the counties here as well. And this will serve to improve the public safety by making sure there are sufficient probation officers to monitor the releasees in their communities. That pretty much covers the Department of Corrections. The only other area here to note, is the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, which has an electronic sentencing worksheet that they will be updating. This will reduce the occurrence of errors in sentencing, which can have included, in a couple of instances, persons who have served prison time longer than they should have served. And it will save time on the part of probation officers that do the sentencing worksheets in preparation for the judges who impose the sentences. So members, I should also note that some of the funding for what we've done in this bill has come out of the MinCorps Revolving Fund. This is the Minnesota Correctional Industries Business Operations Fund. They are running it very well and have had some additional funding beyond what they need to keep the operations running. So we've been able to use some of that money to reinvest in other areas of the Department of Corrections that I've already talked about. One note for your attention, there is an increase in a compliance fee for the Department of Human Rights. That increase, however, is offset exactly by a doubling of the length of time that the certificate of compliance will last, so there's no long-term impact there for businesses. In fact, it will make things more efficient for the Department of Human Rights and for the businesses. Members, that is basically the bill. I'd be glad to stand for questions, and I ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 671, Senator.
I'm sorry, Arpan. Mr. President, I did have one other item to add before we move on, if I might. I have one amendment I'd like to ask the body to consider, and that's the A14 amendment.
Okay, the Secretary will report the LATS A14 amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend Senate File number 671 as follows. Page 6, after line 28, insert. This is the A14 amendment.
Senator Latz, discussion on the A14 amendment. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The A14 amendment adds an appropriation provision for the sexually exploited youth provisions. There's law enforcement and prosecution training. It's a $300,000 grant program to be used by the Ramsey County Attorney's Office to develop statewide model protocol for law enforcement and prosecutors in identifying and intervening with sexually exploited and trafficked youth, and to conduct statewide training on that to law enforcement and prosecutors, and to develop best practices to identify sex trafficked victims and traffickers. This relates to a bill that we did here in the Judiciary Committee, and that the policy provision is moving separately, but this will carry the funding provision for that implementation of that bill.
Further discussion on the amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, would the author yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Latz, in the amendment that you've proposed, there's a dollar amount, I believe, of $300,000. And, you know, we do have a rule in the Senate that amendments have to be balanced. So I was wondering where the $300,000 was coming in order to pay for this new money. Could you tell me where that's coming from?
Senator Latz.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, the $300,000 here, it will not be coming out of the budget for the Judiciary Committee bill that you have before us. It will be carried, funded separately out of the Finance Committee. And Senator Cohen is here to answer any questions on that if you need to.
Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. President, I suppose that my question is directed then to Senator Cohen, and was wondering if he could enlighten us where the $300,000 is going to come from.
Senator Cohen, we yield. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Limmer, as you well know, because you've been here for many years, as you proceed toward the latter end of the session, you'll have some fairly minor bills that will show up. And so what you attempt to do is to have some very limited money on the bottom line that would allow for funding of, you know, nothing huge, nothing $50, $60 million, but where you have a couple hundred thousand. And so this bill, in fact, the request that was made on this particular provision was significantly larger than what was appropriated or provided to Senator Latz for this amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, I see that this particular money is granted to only one county in the state of Minnesota, and that would be Ramsey County. I have another question, Mr. President, for Senator Latz, if Senator Latz could yield.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Latz, I don't recall, but did we have a hearing on this particular budget provision in our committee, in Judiciary Committee?
Senator Latz.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, we heard the underlying policy bill relating to sex trafficking, basically, and sexually exploited youth. It was related to the bill, or related to the provisions that decriminalize the prostitution charges for 16 and 17-year-old girls, and rather treats them as victims. That bill passed out of the policy committee. It turned out later that there was a need to do some training and develop protocols to be able to successfully implement that, so that law enforcement and prosecutors will recognize those instances and be able to implement that bill. So that's where this is coming from.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Latz, as I recall, I do recall a policy discussion. It was a good one. I supported it, but I'm a little concerned about the amendment. The amendment recognizes only one county. I'm concerned about that. If there's any extra funding, I would imagine that we would want to get the whole state to be involved in it rather than one particular county. Since I haven't seen even a fiscal note on this, I'm not sure how to vote on it. We had a lengthy discussion earlier this morning about the lack of fiscal notes in the Senate Finance Committee on some major provisions. And yet, there was a balance sheet that we could make reference to, but I haven't seen a reference sheet. I haven't seen a fiscal note on this. And quite honestly, I think it might even violate our rules by bringing up an amendment in keeping with the rules that any budget increase that's proposed in the form of an amendment must be balanced. And so, as a part of that concern, I would suggest that this, Mr. President, that this amendment is out of order, citing Rule 7 regarding budget targets. Actually, 7.4 would be the reference that I would be bringing your attention to, where it says under paragraph 1, increase net appropriations for a fund for a fiscal biennium without a corresponding increase in net revenue compared to the bill as it was reported to the floor of the Senate.
Senator Latz, I'm wondering if this comes out of Subdivision 3 on the community service numbers. Looks like that's how it reads in the bill or in your amendment. Maybe you could.
Sorry, Mr. President, I'm not sure where you're referring to. Could you help me? I mean, I can address the issue of why the funding is addressed to Ramsey County, but that's a separate question from the motion.
You can address it, then I'll look at the bill and the offset that I think might be occurring. But go ahead. You can, Senator Latz.
Okay. Senator Limmer, with regard to the reason why Ramsey County is identified here, it's because Ramsey County has been the agency that basically developed the idea and has been pushing the policy change that underlies this provision. So they've got the expertise already in there as to how to handle this. In effect, however, we're asking them to act as a statewide agency for purposes of developing the protocols, the training, and the investigative best practices that will be involved here. So they're the ones that have the expertise. We could ask the Department of Public Safety or the Department of Corrections to do it, but they wouldn't be the appropriate agency. Ramsey County happens to have this expertise, and they would then disseminate it statewide, so they will do it on behalf of the state and make sure all the law enforcement agencies have access to this information. So that should answer your question about why Ramsey County is called out particularly in this bill. But that said, Mr. President, I'm going to withdraw the A14 amendment.
All right. The senator has withdrawn the
Mr. President.
A14 amendment.
Oh, he has.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering if Senator Latz would yield.
Senator Latz will yield. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. And to Senator Latz, the policy provisions for several of the allocations are not in this bill. I'm wondering if you can confirm that.
Senator Latz, it's an appropriation bill. Senator Latz.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'm not sure what Senator Ortman is referring to.
Yeah. Senator Ortman, be a little more
Well, Mr. President,
precise.
We have a 10-page bill, and I don't want anyone to misunderstand that the direction, the statutory authority to do the look backs on the background checks and the previous civil commitments would be authorized in this bill. What this bill does is simply appropriate the funds. That's what I'm trying to confirm. I'm wondering if Senator Latz would, again, yield.
Senator Latz will yield. Senator Latz.
Yes, Mr. President, Senator Ortman, that's correct. What I said initially in my description of the bill is that the funding for Senate File 235's provisions that handle the look back for the civil commitment records and so on are carried in this bill, but Senate File 235 resides separately in the Finance Committee at this time, and it will be acted upon separately when we get to that point.
Senator Ortman.
So, and Mr. President, that would also be true of Senate File 777 and Senate File 1241 and Senate File 976, if I can read correctly. Is that also true? I'm hoping Senator Latz will yield.
He will yield. Senator Latz.
Yes, Mr. President. Senator Ortman, that is true.
Thank you. Then, Mr. President, I certainly hope members will oppose this bill because there's no certainty at all that the money will be spent in the ways that we're being led to believe here. There's no certainty at all. In fact, those bills are proceeding separately. And so it's pretty unusual to be asked here on the Senate floor to pay for policy provisions that we don't know what they're going to say or what they'll actually do. They could be amended at any other point. And so we're being asked to spend the money first and ask the questions later. I think that's a bad process for the Senate. I think it's really bad for the taxpayers to ask them to pay for something before they know what they're going to get.
Senator Latz.
Mr. President, when this bill was before the Senate Judiciary Division of Finance, it contained line 107, the funding for Senate File 1241, even though the policy provision for that was traveling separately as a policy bill. It contained line 108 for Senate File 235, even though that bill is traveling separately. It contained line 109, Senate File 976, even though that is traveling separately. It also contained lines 8 and 9, also related to Senate File 235, even though those policy provisions are traveling separately. So when Senator Ortman voted in a recorded roll call vote in favor of this finance bill in committee, she at that time voted apparently to provide the appropriation to make the funds available for those policy bills where the policy language was traveling separately in a different bill. So all I'm asking members is for you to do exactly the same thing that Senator Ortman did in the Judiciary Committee with regard to those bills. There is the addition of lines 110 through 113, and that's because those are Senate File 777. The funding here is being carried. The policy changes are occurring in several other bills, including the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. So we had to have a place to track the appropriations. One other thing to note is that the appropriations are authorizations to spend. It doesn't require the actual expenditure of the money unless the program or the policy that underlies that expenditure becomes law as well. So you're not being asked to spend any money that's going to go to nowhere. It's only going to go if this body and the governor decide to pass the policy provisions that relate to it.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, that's just hogwash because two of the bills in here weren't in the committee when we voted on the bill, 777 and 977. They were amended. Imagine. The bill got amended before we got to vote on it, before it came to the Senate floor. There have been changes. And moreover, the chair didn't tell us at that time that the money, we would have to spend the money first and see the policy later. That's what he's asking us to do. We should not agree to that, members. That is not responsible use of taxpayers' funds. They might be very good programs. In fact, one of these programs, I wrote the bill myself. That's why I asked for the amendment into the bill, into the budget bill, so we would have the money to pay for those lookbacks. I am as much a fan of that provision as anybody in this chamber. But I don't want those provisions to be amended somewhere else. And I also don't want this money to just fall back to the general fund or fall back to the courts if we don't pass the policies. And that's exactly what will happen. We would be asking our taxpayers to pay for a budget with no particular purpose. Shame on anybody in this chamber that would vote yes on that. The process is terrible.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield for a question?
Senator Latz will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Latz, unfortunately, I wasn't at the meeting, the finance meeting that voted on this with Senate file, with the language of Senate File 235. My question would be, Senate File 235 is moving along and still coming forward. Is the funding in 235 as it is now, all that money included in this bill, or are there some local costs involved with 235 when it comes to jail time, expansion in prison, the possible of sentencing people that are in violation of 230 with regards to the policy of 235? Are all the question is, I guess, are all the dollars involved in 235 as it's traveling now included in here, or is it the possibility that we could actually see more money if 235 were to pass?
Senator Latz.
Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, as far as the state expenditures, they are all covered in this bill, as best as we can anticipate in the fiscal note process. In terms of impact on local jail beds, we haven't historically covered those costs in state appropriations. Those are county responsibilities, even when we pass increased penalties or new crimes at the state. So they are not included in this bill or in Senate File 35 separately. But all the costs relating to the state from Senate File 235 are included in this budget bill before us today.
Further discussion on Senate File 671. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, back in the end of March, I received a letter from Meeker County Court Services from their chief probation officer indicating to me that they had some pretty significant concerns regarding the absence of the funding that the state of Minnesota had promised the local units of government for county probation officers. And the chief probation officer from Meeker County also sent to me a county board resolution pointing out that in the fiscal year 2012, there's 55 counties that would participate in the county probation officer program that Meeker County is involved with, and almost $3 million was not provided to the 55 rural counties that had been promised by the state of Minnesota. When I received that, I sent a letter to Commissioner Roy, and I asked him about it. And Commissioner Roy responded by confirming that there is a statute in Minnesota that requires the state to provide 50% of the local probation officers' salaries and benefits, and the current funding level is only at 31%. And just so that you understand, Mr. President, local probation officers are very, very important, not only to our rural counties, but also very, very important to the entire scheme of our correction system. Minnesota is a state in which it does not incarcerate people at a per capita rate that other states do. So this really is a very serious issue, because we have a good deal of people who are on probation and are to be supervised by various probation officers. So in view of that exchange between the county board and the commissioner, I had brought forward an amendment in the Finance Committee that ultimately I withdrew, and I had indicated to Senator Latz that I would give it some more thought and check into it a little bit. And what had happened is Senator Latz found some additional funds within his judicial omnibus bill, which he then sent over in the direction to help offset some of this lack of funding for the local probation officers. And while it does not fully fund the state's obligation, it did help dramatically. And I will tell you, Mr. President, that I have received word from the Minnesota Association of Counties that they're very pleased with what Senator Latz did, and I wanted to express my appreciation to Senator Latz for finding the funding that he did, and I wanted to indicate to Senator Latz that it was not my intention then, as a result of his efforts, to offer the amendments that we had discussed in finance. But I also wanted to do my best to ask Senator Latz to protect that funding on behalf of the various probation officers in the rural districts, and hope that it is not going to be stripped out in conference committee, and that I would be looking for it when it comes back from conference committee. But I sincerely appreciate what Senator Latz has done in that regard. The other issue then that I wanted to mention to you members is that of the increase in the judicial pay. If you will note on your spreadsheet, on the first page, this is on the spreadsheet that Senator Latz has provided to us, lines 6, 25, and 34 for the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and the District Court judges. And what this budget proposes is to give the salary, or the judges, a 4% salary increase in each of the next 2 years in the upcoming biennium. And so that you understand, a current judge's pay at the district court level is $129,000. The chief judge of a district court receives $135. Court of Appeals Associate Justice makes $137,000. Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals makes $144,000. Supreme Court Justice, an Associate Justice, makes $137,000. And the Chief Judge makes $151,000. There is also, that goes to the benefit of the judges, a pension. And currently, the judges receive a contribution from the state of Minnesota at the rate of 20.5%. And under the present bill, the judges would, or the state share would go up to 22.5%. Now, I have never complained about the quality of the service that the judges provide to us. I think they do a very, very good job. But given the fact that the state of Minnesota and many, many of its employees, including our employees, have really had severe restrictions on the rate of increase, and there has been for the last several years severe restrictions in the private sector, I sincerely question the wisdom of giving the judges a 4 and 4. Perhaps maybe a 2 and 2 or a 3 and 3 would be more appropriate. And I think that this would be especially true in view of the fact that there is a report out prepared by the State Court Administrator's Office for what's called a weighted caseload rank order for judges' need. And in that, there is a need for judges in the state of Minnesota, this would be for new judges, to help the current judges with their caseload, which is very honestly very, very heavy. And so that you understand what the judges are asking for in terms of additional judge units, and that would be judges, court reporters, court administrators. In the third judicial district, that would be the counties down in the southeast corner of the state of Minnesota, they have a request in for a number 1 ranking and a number 4 ranking for new judges. Then if you go to the sixth judicial district, that would be the northeast corner of the state of Minnesota,
And they are asking, they are in second place and eighth place in terms of request for new judges. And the 6th District, of course, includes the Iron Range, and that is unique in terms of St. Louis County because St. Louis County has courthouses not only in the county seat, but by statute have courthouses also in the city of Virginia and the city of Hibbing. And so the northeast corner of the state is looking for new judges. In the 7th Judicial District, and that would be the counties going from, say, Stearns, Benton, Morrison, going in a northwesterly direction up through Ottertail, Becker, and Clay, they're also looking for new judges. And they are looking for two new judges, and they would be in 3rd and 9th place. So what I'm trying to point out to you, there is a very real need for more judges in the state of Minnesota. And most of that need is in the rural areas. There is a couple of judges that are being requested for the 4th District, which is Hennepin County. But the earlier needs in this ranking of 1 through 10 are coming out of the rural districts. And so if you are a state senator representing a rural district, you should pay attention to this. Because though there is a very, very great need for new judges in the rural areas. And when I compare the current judges giving themselves a pay raise, or asking, I should say, for a pay raise of 4% next year and 4% the following year, I really question the wisdom of whether or not we should instead be redirecting that money towards new judges rather than an 8% raise for the current judges. And with that comment, Mr. President, thank you.
Okay. For further discussion on Senate File 671. Further discussion, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File number 671, a bill for an act relating to public safety, providing that funds received for out-of-state offenders incarcerated in Minnesota are appropriated to the Department of Corrections.
Secretary will take the roll.
Killers out.
All senators having voted who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 18 nays, the bill is passed and it's had agreed to. The next bill on special orders, number 174 on general orders, Senate File 1589, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, today I'm presenting, as you said, Senate File 1589. This is the Omnibus State Departments and Veteran Budget Division Bill. This bill continues to streamline government, creates efficiencies in agencies, and brings innovative solutions to our decade-old budget problem. Members, we spent roughly $925 million in this bill. That's a 3% increase over base, came in on our target. I'd like to thank the members of the state government, veterans and Veteran Service Division, as well as our excellent staff for their great work in shaping this bill. I do have the A6 amendment that I'd like to offer at this time.
Secretary will report the Saxhog A6 amendment.
Senator Saxhog moves to amend Senate File number 1589 as follows, page 18, line 24. This is the A6 amendment.
Senator Saxhog on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. The A6 amendment does two things. One, it removes the veterans theme lottery ticket, and this is placed with a straight general fund appropriation to the Support Our Troops account. And secondly, deletes one section to avoid confusion about the North Star fee. They add some clarifying language to make it clear that the fee for using the North Star system will not be charged merely for viewing or inspecting data.
Discussion on the A6 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to briefly go over the change items in the spreadsheet. Following that, I'll go over some language, and then I'll stand for questions. On the change items, under the legislature, the Senate operating increase is 9%. The House operating increase, 9%. LCC increase 9%, and because of some extra things we're going to ask the Office of Legislative Audit to do, they get a 14% increase. You see the increases to their base on the sheet. The governor is being increased on his rider limits for money that he gets from agencies. That's been increased from $720,000 to $750,000. HAVA funds for the Secretary of State are on for $500,000. That replaces the federal funds, which are going away. Reduction under the Secretary of State, reduction for business services efficiencies for the biennium, $320,000. Attorney's fees for a redistricting lawsuit, $355,000. And the appropriate remaining HAVA funds, it appropriates the last federal money for voter registration, election reporting, support to local officials and military overseeing, that will be $1 million. Under the state auditor, I remove the job Z oversight to the legislative auditor from the state auditor, and we're going to rewrite the small cities and towns accounting system. The auditor will be allowed to charge up to $300 per entity, and there'll be one-time money there to set it up for $250,000. Under the campaign finance public disclosure board, operating budget increase to the base $311,000 per year. Administrative hearings, there's two deficiencies. One for data practices hearings, that's for $36,000. One for campaign violations deficiencies, that's for $60,000. Under the Office of Enterprise Technology, better known as MINIT, reductions, a result of efficiencies and centralization efforts due to the IT, will amount to $396,000. Consolidations, $6.7 million. E-government public-private partnership, $4 million to the base, and IT consolidation cash flow. We're going to lend them $110,000, and they will pay that back $110,000 with interest. Under administration, a number of expansions under lean, under SMART, and under internal audit function, we've increased the base, as you say, over on fiscal year 14-15. This will reduce costs and duplication in agencies, health, human resources, financial management, support small agencies, and the internal audit function will add a new internal auditor position. Cap preservation has been moved to capital investment. Transfer the EQB is going to the PCA. Nellie Stone Johnson bust will be placed in the capital, cost $30,000. Public TV increase, equipment and Manchee grant increase, one time, $1.5 million. Amper's radio increase, equipment and Manchee grant increase, allow stations in Leech Lake, Boys Fort, and White Earth to be eligible for the grants. $500,000. Minnesota Public Radio increased funds capital infrastructure cost $500,000. And Minnesota Public Radio, Minnesota Emergency and Amber Alert Systems, $120,000 to the base. Under Minnesota Management Budget, statewide budget system development, phases two and three, replace fiscal notes and capital budget systems. To the base, there'll be some money to establish it, but the base will be increased to $725,000. Results management initiative, it's agency training for performance managers, increasing the base to $500,000. Enterprise human resources capacity, updating human resources, increasing the base $900,000. Compensation Council, of course, it covers the executive branch, constitutional office, general fund increases of the Compensation Council, provides $200,000 for a compensation study, and in the total there is $2.5 million. Under the Revenue Department, reduction in tax because of tax system savings, efficiencies in the new integrated tax system, savings of $4.9 million for the biennium. Taxpayer assistant grants increase adds $200,000 a year for a total of $400,000 for the biennium, $200,000 to the base. Requires the electronic wage levy payments and disclosures. So there's a savings due to no longer having a paper system, savings $448,000. Property tax technical grants helps counties cover costs converting to new electronic property tax data system. It's going to cost $300,000. Under the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, operating budget increase of $30,000. Under the Race and Ethnic Councils, there'll be an increase of $250,000 per biennium per council. Under the Minnesota Historical Society, expand education outreach through the North Star book, $150,000 to the base. Minnesota Forest History Center, additional funding, $50,000 a year to the base. Minnesota Air National Guard Museum, grant increase of $34,000 for the biennium. Hockey Hall of Fame, grant increase of $100,000, $32,000 a year to the base. Minnesota Military Museum, archivist position to archive boxes of military records, $60,000 each of 2 years for a total of one time $120,000. And a grant increase to the Military Museum of $100,000 a year It's a one-year grant of $10,000. Minnesota Arts Board, Regional Arts Council increase to the base, $61,000 for a total of $122,000. Humanity Center, online for schools and adult learning, $14,000 to the base. Everybody Wins Children's Reading Grant, $50,000 one time. Accountancy Board, $172,000 to the base. Cosmetologist Examiner's Board, one-time money of $8,000 and $1,000 to the base. Inspections and investigations fee changes, a total of to the base of $300,000. That's because they'll be collecting that much. Barber's Examiner's Board, $60,000. Each of 2 years, $60,000 to the base, actually. Veterans Affairs, transfer of support our veterans. Troops, SR account, as we said, that's $140,000 one-time appropriation. Healthcare IT improvement for department and vets homes. IT upgrades, 9 FTEs, addresses disaster recovery. Increase to the base of $1,000. Or $1,910,000. Still under veterans. Budget, the Southwest Minnesota Veterans Cemetery operations increased in the base of $425,000 starting in fiscal year 15. $200,000 to the base for the Honor Guard permanent funding. Minnesota GI Bill expansion, $500,000 to the base. County Veterans Service Officer grant expansion, $500,000 to the base. Permanent Gold Star program funding provides ongoing funding to support families who have lost a family member in combat, $100,000 to the base. Minnesota Assistance for Council of Veterans, this increases the base appropriation of $500,000 to $750,000 for the biennium. Eliminate Minnesota Ambulance Association grant, savings of $110,000, transfer to support our veterans, troops account. That's the $840,000 that we appropriated. Military Affairs, USS Minnesota Commissioning, $200,000 one time. Expenditure changes, then. We have the changes are total of $27,931,000. Special revenues, $6,150,000. Revenue, because of the continuous electronic payment, $3,000. CPA, Accountancy Board, $237,000 to the base. Cosmetologist, $700,000 to the base. Barber's Examiner's Board, $31,000 to the base. The general fund revenue then of $1,702,000. State Auditor's rewrite of small cities and towns accounting system, one time of $250,000. Office of Enterprise Technology, $4 million. Revenue from auto theft surcharge, $100,000 starting in 16 and 17. So the other funds revenue is $4,250,000. General fund base, $898,346,000. Changes in expenditures, $27,931,000. Cancellations, $110,000. Total general fund spending, $926,167,000. Less revenue changes. So the Senate File 1589 represents a 3% increase in spending at $924,465,000. The bill has a number of articles. Article 1, of course, is the appropriation. Article 2 repeals the Minnesota Sunset Act. Article 3 starts out sections 1 and 2 as part of Senate File 910, Senator Dietzix, and it allows the Secretary of State to accept funds from outside sources for technology projects for the state's election system. Section 3, Senate File 255, SACSOG. City and town accounting system software allows the state auditor to charge a one-time user fee of up to $300 for the small city and town accounting system. Sections 4 through 15 are from Senate File 804. That's Senator Wicklund's file. That's the Department of Administration and Minutes provisions. And as I say, they were heard in committee with Senator Wicklund, as were Section 12 and Section 13. Section 16 moves audit responsibility from the Dairy Council from the state auditor to the legislative auditor. Section 17 are from Senator Rest, Senate File 191. It audits, it's the audits of the job opportunity building zones, better known as Job Z, and moving it to the legislative auditor. Section 18, which is one section, Senate File 1245, Senator Scalzi, changes the name of the Office of Enterprise Technology to Minute. To Article 4, sections 1 through 18 are from Senate File 1055, Senator Pedersen's bill. It's the Barber's bill. Senate File 1106 is, and Senate File 770, 1106 being Senator Metzen, 770 being Senator Johnson, are the cosmetology bill. Senate File 86 deals with the, which is Senator Rest, deals with the Board of Accountancy. Under Article 5, we have Section 1, which is Senate File 1119, Senator Sparks. It deals with the military leave provisions. Sections 2 through 6 and 11 are from Senate File 536, which is Senator Chamberlain, deals with county veteran service officers' grants. Sections 7 and 8 are the governors of the expansion of the Minnesota GI Bill. Senate File 628 is SACSOG's bill. It deals with the authorization of veterans home in Beltran County. On to Article 6. This article deals with auto theft amendments and how we get the money from Commerce to the Department of Revenue. Sections 4 through 9 and 12 and 13 deal with electronic tax returns and for anything with a receipt over $10,000. And sections 1 and 14 are basically housekeeping agreements for equipment lease that was paid off early, and so an appropriation is no longer needed. That brings us to Article 7, the Compensation Council. Background, this article contains the recommendations the Compensation Council has modified in the division. Section 1, salaries, paydays, mileage per diem, sets the salaries of members of the legislature at 33% of the salary authorized for the governor. Section 2, other salaries and compensation plans, and 4, salary limits permit the governor to set the salaries of agency heads anywhere within the salary ranges that have been approved by the legislature. Other appointing authorities, example being Minnesota State Retirement System, continue to be required to seek interim approval of the Legislative Coordinating Commission and ratification of the legislature for setting salaries of the agency heads. Section 3, salary increases, adjust the governor's salary annually based on the consumer price index. And this was an amendment put on and supported by Senator Pappas. Section 4 is a conforming change related to Section 2, changes that allow the governor to set salaries without approval of the LCC and the legislature. Section 5, Group 1 salary limits increase the salary range maximum for the heads of the most of most state agencies from the current level of 95% of the salary of the governor to 133% of the governor's salary. Section 6, Group 2 salary limits, increase the salary range maximum for the heads of the smaller state agencies from the current level of 85% of the salary of the governor to 120% of the governor's salary. Appointing authorities to recommend certain salaries establishes parallel requirements in Section 7 for the governor and for other appointing authorities to consider when setting salaries of agency heads. Appointing authorities other than the governor must continue to submit proposed salary increases to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for approval. Section 8, membership, requires that the legislative representatives on the Compensation Council not be legislators. This was an amendment by Senator Rest. Section 9, salary limits, eliminates the salary of the agency head as a limit on salaries for employees of that agencies. Salaries of employees will instead be limited by the maximum of their salary ranges provided in their collective bargaining agreements or compensation plans. Section 10, unusual employment situation, amends provisions relating to salary setting for unusual employment situations. Changes reflect that maximum salary in these situations, and it is the maximum of the position's salary range, not the salary of the agency head. Section 11, compensation study, requires the Commissioner of Management Budget to contract for a market analysis of compensation for managerial employees in the executive branch. $200,000 is appropriated for this study in this bill. Section 12, constitutional officer salaries, increases the salaries of constitutional officers by 3% on January 1st, 2015 and 2016. Section 13 is a repeal, it's a housekeeping repeal. And Section 14 is the effective date, provides retroactive effective date for the changes to agency head salaries and agency employee caps, and immediate effective dates for all other changes except the legislature salaries increase, which is effective January 1st, 2015. With that, members, I would note that we passed out the membership in the Compensation Council. So that you'd have some idea who came up with these recommendations. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 1589, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield for a question?
He will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Saxhog, I'd like to bring your attention to page 32. It's regarding... Well, it's a data privacy issue, but I was wondering if you could maybe give me an indication of how you arrived at the conclusions that are outlined on lines 25 through 33, and then it carries on to page 33. But the question I have is this is in reference to private entity services, a fee authority is being justified, and they make reference to an entity called North Star, and I'm not sure if that's the North Star rail service or if it's an information service of some kind. And I was wondering if you might be able to tell me what that is, in addition to telling me how you arrived at a $2 per transaction for people seeking online government information. I was wondering if you could expand on that.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. President and Senator Limmer. You know, that was kind of the part of the second part of my amendment, as you know. It deleted the section to avoid confusion about the North Star fee. It adds a clarifying language to make clear that the fee is used for the North Star system will not be charged merely for viewing or inspecting data, but indeed has to have some kind of work done before they can charge that $2 fee.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Saxhog, there's times when
whenever we've had the issue of fees, the cost of reimbursing government services for providing government information, that has normally gone through. It's a discussion regarding data privacy, and I'm surprised that this provision was not addressed in the Judiciary Committee. A $2 fee is for information, but is that per page, or would $2 be for a 300-page report? Could you expand on that, or is it just the online government information service hookup when they request any and all information? Could you tell me how this system works?
Senator Saxart.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, that fee and how it's going to be charged is going to be established by the e-government advisory council established in Section 15.
Senator Saxhog, the question I asked is the $2 per transaction, is that for one page or a volume of pages? And you're telling me go check out this e-government advisory council and they'll tell us. Now we're relying on an advisory commission rather than how we've traditionally handled it, where we put this decision in the hands of the Judiciary Committee in handling the expenses when our citizens want information from a free and open government. And that has always traditionally been the history. And I notice that on page 33, starting on line 3, not only will the e-government advisory council give recommendation regarding the convenience fee, I'm not quite sure who that convenience is for when government is now collecting more money, but receipts from the convenience fee shall be deposited in this North Star account. So now we're having a commission tell government what they're going to charge, and then they're going to collect the money and keep it in their own account. And I'm a little concerned that the Judiciary Committee did not have any input in the limit to the fee. I am thankful that you put in on your amendment that for the mere viewing of data, you're not going to charge anyone. But I wish I could convince the Department of Health and Human Services to do that. They're going to charge $9 for that privilege in another bill. But I am concerned that we did not address this in Judiciary. And did you get any requests from the Judiciary Chair to look at this provision when you wrote the bill?
Senator Saxhart.
Mr. President, Senator Lemmer, not that I'm aware of. I'd go back though because there's two parts always to your question. One dealing with should you have gone to the Judiciary Committee, but one back to this advisory committee who will tell us what we need to charge. This is going to be for specialty information that's going to be collected and dispersed from the system, as you said, not merely for viewing or inspecting data.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I don't want to belabor this, but there are times when we charge citizens for information, and it's appropriate to do so. It usually covers the direct cost that government absorbs when there's a cost to give information out to a citizen. But what is the cost for an online government hookup when someone is looking at a website and they want to print something? And if they print something, they're going to be charged for it now. I find that a little concerning. And I also believe that there's times when government, at least in the past, before we started getting involved in this, These type of fees become cash cows for different government agencies and departments. And that's why we in the legislature are involved and are accountable to the fees that we charge, rather than giving it off to this e-government advisory council. I'm very concerned about the direction of where this is going.
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I'd like to move a brief recess. And the majority caucus is going to caucus in the retiring room for about 15 minutes.
On the motion to recess, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands at recess.
This is the A23 amendment.
Senator Kisoka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this deals with the Sunset Commission. The short version is this deletes Article 2. If I can just talk about the Sunset Commission a little bit, we started this in 2011 and took a look at some other states. Texas in particular has been doing a Sunset Commission for more than 10 years, but their commission saved that state $783 million over that time frame, simply looking at efficiencies and whether they should look for duplication or any waste in government agencies. And so we took a look at this last year, or in 2011, and for the first time we enacted that here. And I know that Representative Kiffmeyer, now Senator Kiffmeyer, was the chair, and Senator Bonhoff was the co-chair. You know, I was on that commission. And our desire was that it would be bipartisan and that we would move forward. And so the first year we took the medical boards, state councils, commissions, some would call them the low-hanging fruit, and we took a look at them and looked at different things that became obvious that we could help make them better. And so we did those first, but the idea was that every agency over a 12-year period would go through this process. And if it ended up being anything like Texas over time, it had the potential to save the state a lot of money and make the agencies more efficient. And so with that, Mr. President, I will stand for questions. And I would like a roll call on this.
Will be a roll call. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would speak against the amendment. After months of agency overviews and hours of staff time, expended resource, and a lot of good work, the Sunset Commission found no wasteful spending and did not set any state agency. The legislature has oversight and authority over state agency, and particularly in the way the state, the Minnesota Senate is organized right now with the policy committees the way they are. I believe that can more effectively deal with agencies and what the Sunset Agency was doing. So I'd speak in, against the amendment. Thank you.
Discussion on the A23 amendment. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. President. I support the amendment. The commission was in place, members and Mr. President, for 1 year, and they started out, as I think Senator Gazelka may have mentioned, looking at this easy stuff to get a process going. So I'd say anybody in here would probably agree we need more than 1 year to get this going and up and running. And I think, I don't know, I'm sorry, Senator Gazelka, maybe you mentioned this, but I don't know that we heard this in the committee, where they came forward and somebody offered a bill, said we want to repeal this and here's why. We never had really had a discussion in committee about it. We went over the omnibus bill and we didn't do it. Now, we talk a lot about process in here, and I learned a lot in 2 years here regarding process from my colleagues from the majority party now. So I would I'd ask you to think about the process. We didn't have a full vetting of this in committee. This has only been out there signed into law by our governor for 1 year, and it was working, and we can have benefits. This is about reform. It is about more effective government, and I would support Senator Gazelka's amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Boniff.
Mr. President, members, I did have the privilege of being the vice chair with then Representative Kiffmeyer, now Senator Kiffmeyer. And I will say that the work that we did on the Sunset Commission was some of the most fulfilling work that I've done since I've been a legislator. We were charged with overseeing these councils of color, the Amateur Sports Commission, all the medical practice boards, and charged with this very significant role of determining whether or not they would continue in their existence. And the only way that something could continue in existence is if you had a majority vote to do that. And the way the bill was written is if you didn't have a majority vote for there to them to continue their existence, they would sunset. And so we spent, I remember over, you know, the interim, the winter holidays, we spent hours and hours and hours, and tremendous amount of staff time went into compiling the research and preparing for that effort, and really worked in a very strong and bipartisan way. So you might think that I would be in support of this amendment, and I'm not in support of the amendment. And I wanted to state that I'm not, for two reasons. Number one, when I first read that bill, I thought the stakes were too high. I think having the default means that something sunsets is a little bit like playing Russian roulette. I remember having a fight with Senator Van Perry on the floor, and we had come to agreement, members, both sides, House, Senate, Republicans, Democrats, we had come to complete agreement on how we were going to handle things, and Senator Perry didn't agree, and he was chair, and we almost had the whole thing fall apart. And when I first read the bill, I was asked to be a co-author, and I chose not to be because of the high-stakes language in that bill, that the default, if you don't come to agreement, is sunset. And when we're talking about our state agencies or some of the other things that would come before this Sunset Commission, I think those stakes are untenable, and it puts too much uncertainty and insecurity in our process. That's my first reason. The second reason I don't support the amendment is because I think the divisions should do this work, that we are charged as chairs of our divisions to provide the kind of really scrutiny and oversight and in a way that that should demand that we fulfill this function as the committees with jurisdiction over those areas. And so because of that, I'm not in favor of the Sunset Commission as written. Number one, the high stakes nature, the default being sunset, and then also the fact that I think it usurps the very job of the committees themselves. And then finally, we did not provide adequate funding. If you talk about Texas, Senator Gazelka, I don't know if you know how many staff people they have to do that work. They have a tremendous amount of resources devoted to it, research, staff people, as we do in our committees. But the Sunset Commission never had that. We put a tremendous burden on our staff. And then finally, I would just like to acknowledge now Senator Kiffmeyer for her leadership on that, because I learned a lot in working with Senator Kiffmeyer in that exercise, and have valued that experience, as I said, higher than almost anything I had worked on previously.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Bonhoeff, for those very kind words, but the reality is that I do support this amendment to restore the Sunset Commission and its work, very valuable work. To just throw this out after 1 year is really ridiculous. I mean, just realize that what you could have done if you didn't like the name or you didn't like something else or restructured, you want to do that. But there is no body here that takes a look with the thoroughness of the Sunset Commission as we did in that last year. There is no body that does that. Matter of fact, our hours and our times here on state and local government committees, Department of Health, Human Services, and all of those is already hugely filled, and the hours are short, whereas the Sunset Commission was able to do their work and could do this on a year-round basis. I think it's interesting that you look at the work that is done in committees and the work of the Sunset Commission. They are not the same. And the Sunset Commission made recommendations to the legislature. They did not have the power to do the sunsetting. They made recommendations. And recommendations a lot more than just sunset or don't sunset. They looked a lot at how they were structured, the councils of color. They made recommendations to the Department of Administration. And they were very grateful. Many of them commented many times that nobody ever has given this time and attention to the details of what they do ever through the legislative process. They're usually just swept in and they exist in whatever they do. They were very appreciative of what was accomplished during that time. And so could be changed, doesn't need to be ended. I think also we here in the legislature appreciate the work of the Pension Commission. Don't we have a state government bill that does pension work? We could as easily sunset the Pension Commission. We could sunset the LCCMR. We could sunset many. We could end the LCC. There are a lot of things the Legislative Coordinating Commission does. We could also end that, and we could say, well, we'll just have the committees do that work. They should do that work. But we don't, because we realize there's a lot of work that can be done in a commission that could not be done in the time allocated to a regular committee. So, members, I encourage you to support the 823 amendment from Senator Gazelka. Please vote yes. And keep this valuable work of the Sunset Commission. Thank you.
Gazelka, and then.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'll keep this brief, but the whole goal is to reduce elimination, eliminate duplication, reduce government waste. And I think if you ask the average Minnesotan, does Minnesota government or federal government have any of those? And I think they would say absolutely. And so this is an opportunity for us to have eyes on these agencies and take an extra look. And one thing about Texas, where I said they saved $783 million, they invested or spent $28 million over that period of time since 1982. So, yeah, they did have more people they paid for, but the returns that they got were phenomenal. And so, members, I would encourage a green vote.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to oppose the amendment, and I did want to inform members that the State and Local Government Committee did review this legislation, the repeal of the Sunset Commission, and we had a very serious look at it. It was a very thoughtful discussion. We did come to the conclusion that we felt that we already had in place the legislative auditor and that they are well staffed and they do very thorough reviews of programs, and that was the appropriate place to put kind of time and resources. That even with the Sunset Commission, I think they met 9 times for, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 hours, did good work on the small agencies, but the large state agencies were next in line to be reviewed and really didn't feel that there was the time or the budget or the need to review large state agencies that we, you know, quite frankly, we weren't going to eliminate. If there were programs in state agencies that needed to be reviewed, and there's a rotating process that the legislative auditor goes through, or they certainly respond to our requests to review agencies and programs and agencies, that seemed like a more appropriate approach. So the committee in the end did vote to support the legislation to repeal the Sunset Commission.
Senator Westrup.
Mr. President.
Most,
just about demoted you, Mr. President.
Is that a demotion or promotion? Senator Westrup.
Mr. President, members, I would urge your green vote on this amendment. As Senator Gazelka said, we've only had this, and Senator Chamberlain, we've only had this government reform that, by the way, our Governor Dayton touted about all the reforms that he's pursued and pushed through in his first two terms as governor. This is one of them. For the freshman senators like myself, understand that it is just about impossible. It's nearly impossible, Mr. President, for the legislature to ever sunset anything around here. And I'm speaking from 16 years of experience. We have had more sunset bills, extending sunsets, extending sunsets, extending sunsets. And everybody else knows what I'm talking about. This was one effort to try to reform government and really look at things that we don't need to continue. And here, after 1 year, we're going to throw that government reform out and say, you know what, we don't want to really look that seriously at government waste or duplication. So I think we ought to vote green on this amendment, but really, give it a chance. Let's give it a chance. The public wants us to get rid of wasteful government. This was a reform that the governor signed into law about a year ago, and it gives us as a legislative body the opportunity to sunset commissions, sunset things that do not need to extend or are duplicated. And sometimes we just extend sunsets because we haven't got the time to really dissect and figure out if this is needed or not. That's part of what this reform was for. Now, let's embrace government reform. Let's embrace efficient government. Let's embrace getting rid of wasteful government spending when we can find it. Vote green on this amendment, keeping it in the bill, and getting rid of government reform is not the right direction for the citizens of Minnesota, and the taxpayers demand more than just allowing wasteful government to go without oversight and without a way to get rid of the sunset provisions that we've passed in prior laws.
A further discussion on the 823 amendment, Senator Saxhog.
Mr. President, I would move to impose call of the Senate for the duration.
Senate's under call. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would reiterate what we said before, that there are institutions right now within the Senate, within the legislature.
We have to move first to lift the proceedings of the roll call. That's your motion. All in favor, signify. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move further proceedings on the roll call to be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, that's exactly what Senator Saxhog was going to say. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Saxhog.
And briefly, thank you, Mr. President. I would reiterate the fact that we have institutions within the legislature and within state government to take care of what we're talking about here with the Sunset Commission, and so I would hope that everybody could press red vote. Thank you.
Secretary will take the roll on the Gazelka 823 amendment.
Any more down there, probably?
All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 27 ayes and 38 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion on the Senate file? Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. President, I have the A-29 amendment.
What's the number again?
A-29.
Secretary will report the Chamberlain A-29 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain moves to amend Senate file number 1589 as follows. Page 24, after line 24, insert. And this is the A-29 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, what this does is just what some of our discussion was about. And the only discussion we had in, I appreciate that in the local government committee, they heard this bill, but local government is not carrying this bill in their own bill. We're carrying in this bill for discussion. And the little limited discussion we had in state gov division, we were having a short discussion, and some senators at the table made that comment that we have the legislature and the committees are in charge and should take responsibility for doing this. And as Senator Westrum had pointed out, that's probably almost never happens. I don't know if it has happened. We create a lot of them around here, but I don't know that we shut them down. So what this does is just what Senator Bonhoff and Senator Saxhog and others have talked about. This will require the auditor to scrutinize this body and make sure that we are looking at these commissions and these government agencies to see if they have any value, and then to give recommendations. So this is the language that all of you have just been requesting. So I would hope that you could support this. It doesn't renew the Sunset Commission, but it now gives statutory authority to OLA to do this. Now, there's plenty of money in that budget. There's $10.8 million, I think, allotted to the auditor. So we could satisfy everybody's needs and institutionalize this and put in place a process that'll do this. There's an old saying, there is no plan unless it's written down. Unless we write something down and we really don't have a plan. What this amendment will do, say, fine, we'll get rid of the legislative, the Sunset Commission. We'll save that $278,000. We'll take existing money in an existing office and satisfy the desires of other members, and we will put our plan in writing, and we will show the public we fully intend on controlling the waste and making things more effective and efficient. So I'd like a roll call, and hope you can support the amendment. Thank you.
There'll be a roll call. Senator Saxhog, did you wish to?
Thank you, Mr. President. As Chamberlain said, this amendment kind of charges the OLA with checking out the legislature, make sure they're going to do everything that the Sunset Commission did. Well, actually, this bill does just that. We put some extra money, as you saw, the 40% increase in the OLA, not just to do what the Sunset Commission has done, but to do some other things that came to our attention too. But again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we have the policy committees now in the Senate, and I believe that they will fill in very nicely for what the Sunset Commission did. I would hope that you could vote red on this against this amendment.
Further discussion. Secretary will take the roll on the Chamberlain A-29 amendment. Ready to vote?
All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There be 28 ayes and 38 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Okay, we have about, looks like about 16 to 20 more amendments at the desk, so just so we, for planning purposes. Any further amendments? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move the A-20 amendment.
A-20.
Secretary will report the Hall A-20 amendment.
Might be under Chamberlain.
That it's under the name of Chamberlain. Okay. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hall moves to amend Senate File number 1589 as follows, page 13, line 25. This is the A-20 amendment.
Senator Hall on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is basically taking the finances for the Forest History Center, which I'm not sure exactly what that is. I know some have called it the Tree Museum, and I know it's up north, but it would be taking that finances, which I think is money that we don't need to put into something that I don't think there's a need for. I think we're in an economy right now in a time that we need to provide for the needs that are out there. And so my suggestion in this, and it's not a suggestion, it's part of the amendment, is to put that $50,000 into the Everybody Wins reading program. I think that is a more important part right now with the results of what's happening in education that I think everybody would agree we need more finances to help kids learn to read.
Further comments, Senator? Are you finished? Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Forest History Center is the interpretive center for the Minnesota forest industry, forest management, anybody who believes in forests and the good management thereof. It's run by the Minnesota Historical Society. It's been underfunded for the last 10 years. It's very important for northern Minnesota because we're a resource-based industry, and we appreciate the school children that come there and all the tourists that come there and learn about the forest industry. It's really not a tree museum. I think as the senator realizes, it's a little bit more. There's a little bit more to forestry and the forest industry than just a tree museum. As far as Everybody Wins, it's a well-funded program, and I really don't believe they need that $100,000.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog. I would agree. I think we all do appreciate the tree or the forest industry. I still think it's important that we up any way we can to get children to learn to read better, and I would ask for a roll call vote.
There will be a roll call. Any further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on A-20 Hall Amendment. Scoy, Scalzi, Ingebrich and Jensen. What a All right, all senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There will be 24 ayes and 42 nays. The amendment is not adopted. So I would suggest we've got 15 more amendments. I don't know. stay close to your seat so we can get through our business of the Minnesota Senate. Senator, further discussion. Senator Kosofsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A24 amendment.
Secretary will report the 24 amendment, 24 Kosofsky amendment.
Senator Gazelka moves to amend Senate File 1589 as follows, page 2, line 30. This is the A24 amendment.
Senator Kosofsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an Article 6. This has to do with the Auto Theft Prevention Fund. I think members know that 50 cents on every auto policy goes into this theft prevention fund to prevent theft, auto theft. And yet, both Republicans and Democrats and Republicans, whether it's governors or legislators, have been raiding this fund for the last 8 years to cover the budget shortfalls. And so the way the language is in the bill as is, the first $1.3 million of this fund goes directly into the general fund, and this would remedy that and make it so that it all is used for what it's intended for. I would request a roll call on this and a green vote.
There will be a roll call. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to serve on the Commerce Committee, where we have a magnificent chair who does just a wonderful job with the committee. But as a member who has spoken on the floor in support of this point in the past, I would be remiss to not do so again. And while we've made some progress this session, I would urge us as a body to continue to make sure that funds that are added for a specific purpose go to those specific purposes and not into the general fund. So, Senator Gazelka, I'll be supporting your amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. President.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I, too, support this amendment of Senator Gazelka's, and I do believe that we should stop taking the money and giving it to the general fund. And therefore, currently we have a 50-cent fee that we're charging, and that collects about $2.6 million per year. We're giving $1.3 million of that to the general fund, so I would like to amend the amendment with amendment number A28.
Secretary will report, the Dames A28 amendment to the amendment. Senator Dames.
And what that would do is it would reduce the fee from 50...
back up. Secretary will report the amendment. That's okay.
Senator Dames moves to amend the Gazelka amendment to Senate File number 1589 as follows, page 1 after line 4, insert. And this is the A28 amendment.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does is it, on line 69, it inserts 25 cents versus a 50 cents, so it would be reducing the fee that we actually charge the policyholders. It would reduce it by half, which would take care of the $1.3 million that we're giving to the general fund. So I'd encourage a green vote on the amendment to the amendment.
That means you're asking for a roll call. If you're
and yes, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Senator Kosofsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do consider that a friendly amendment. The dollars are still what they use, and I think would be used appropriately.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Amendment. We're on the amendment to the amendment. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. President. And it is an interesting situation that the first dollars are being used to fund the general fund, but we really haven't figured out a way to replace the money that you use to replace the money. And at this particular time, I really don't have a particular problem on the amendment to the amendment. We'll speak to the next amendment after.
Or any further discussion on the amendment to the amendment, which is Senator Dames, that 50 to 25. Secretary will take the roll. Senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 28 ayes and 38 nays. The amendment to the amendment is not adopted. We're on the Zelke amendment. Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on the Kosolke amendment. Reopen the board. All senators having voted, desire to vote. I see you, but we're not going to be waiting for each and every person. Senator Chamberlain. Secretary will. Secretary will close the roll. Be 29 ayes and 37 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the Senate file. Further discussion. Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate file number 1589, a bill for an act relating to the operation of state government finance, allowing the Secretary of State authority to accept funds from local government units for election systems, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate's under call.
Thank you.
The only excuse that we have at the desk is Senator Miller, so we should be voting. All senators haven't voted, desired vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 34 ayes and 32 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Next bill under consideration is number 76 on general order, Senate file 541, Senator Metzen, the omnibus liquor bill. Senator Metzen.
Madam President, members of the committee or the Senate, this is the omnibus liquor bill for the Senate this year. I believe there are 12 sections. We heard these bills, I think, at two sessions in the Minnesota, in the Commerce Committee. I believe it's non-controversial. I'll go through the sections. Section one is Senate File 467. This is a Senator Eaton bill. It allows a city with a municipal liquor store to issue a brewer taproom license. Municipalities can do it now, but this allows municipal liquor stores to do it also with the vote of the council. Section two is an Ingebrigtsen bill. It allows a micro distillery to provide limited samples of distilled spirits manufactured on the premises. Section three allows a brewer producing less than 20,000 barrels a year to make off-sale sales and growlers. This is a Senator Pappas bill. The next one is Section 6. Senator Dahl authorizes the commissioner to issue a malt liquor educator license. Section 7 is also a Dahl bill. Expands the current law relating to wine tastings for nonprofit organizations to include malt liquor. Section 8 is a Reinhart bill. Senate File 958 updates a license for the Twin Cities Marathon. Section 9 is Senator Rosen's bill, extends the sunset date related to the City of Winnebago's Beer Festival. Section 10
is a bill to issue an odd sale liquor license to the Lower Town Regional Ballpark. Section 11 is a Dibble bill, laws relating to sake brew pubs. I guess there's only one. Section 12, Senator Pratt authorizes Shakopee to issue an on-sale license to Valley Fair. And I believe there was no opposition at all in the committee on these 12 sections. I think, Madam Chair, I believe there's a couple of amendments that we've run by the committee members, and we'll hear the amendments.
Discussion on Senate File 541. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A3 amendment.
Secretary will report the A3 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend Senate File Number 541 as follows, page 10, line 8. This is the A3 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. This is the amendment to Section 11 that has to do with sake brew pubs. There is one in the whole country, as a matter of fact. It's in my district. And it was established a number of years ago. It's a brew pub, very much in the fashion of any brew pub that you would find. Sake, as it turns out, is actually a malted beverage. And at the time they opened, they had intended to sell sake for off-sale consumption as well, much like brew pubs do today in growlers. But then they ran up against liquor authorities not really knowing if sake was a wine or distilled or a malted beverage, even though it had already been established to be a malted beverage. So that's the reason for Section 11. It just simply establishes that the sake brew pub can do the same as any other brew pub, sell for off sale. But this amendment comes in at the request of the Department of Public Safety. It's just a couple of items that we had left off in the proposal. The first part says that this occurs with the approval of the Commissioner of Public Safety. And then the second part says that the hours for off sale are limited to the same as any liquor store would be, just like a brew pub would be required to do.
Madam President, I approve.
Senator Metzen?
I approve the amendment.
Senator Gazelka?
Thank you, Madam President. I visit with Senator Dibble on this. I'm the lead on commerce for the minority, and we agreed to it as well.
Thank you. Further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 541?
Madam President.
Senator Pappas.
Madam President, I have the A7 amendment.
Secretary will report the A7 amendment. Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File Number 541 as follows, page 10, after line 25. This is the A7 amendment.
Now, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. The City of St. Paul informed a license holder kind of just recently in April after our deadlines that their license was in jeopardy because they hadn't met the 70-40 requirement in law. What that is that it's for, St. Paul allows for strong beer for holders of wine and 3-2 beer licenses for a number of neighborhood restaurants that aren't eligible for liquor licenses because of the limitations in the city charter. But it requires that you have to sell 60% food and 40% liquor. And when it was first established, restaurants could easily meet the requirement, but because the price of popular craft beers and fine wines have gone up faster than the price of food, it's become more difficult for some restaurants. So this would create a small exception in the City of St. Paul for a particular establishment that has great food, but and is clearly not a bar or a nightclub, because that's what it was designed to prevent. So I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion, Senator Metzen.
Madam President, I approve of this amendment. I think maybe going forward we might be doing some more of these, but at this time it's kind of a pilot program, and I think we ought to allow it. What's going on is these brew pubs, that the beer, quite frankly, could be like $8, and the food could be $4, so they don't meet the threshold the way I understand it. So this is all right.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I visit with Senator Metzen. I also visit with some of the players involved in this industry, and they are all okay with it.
Is there further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Pappas, if you could just take me through, would Senator Pappas yield to a question, Madam President?
Senator Pappas, will you yield? She does. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Pappas, could you just explain why this provision shouldn't be extended to other establishments outside of the city of St. Paul? I may have missed some of your comments, so I apologize.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator, it's only because we're doing this as a floor amendment. I think the committee would like to take a broader look at this situation, this law, the 60-40 split. But for this particular business, they've kind of crossed the threshold. So we're just trying to take care of it for, it's actually Groveland Tap, because now their food sales are down and their liquor sales are up, and they're not meeting the requirement, the 60-40 requirement, and they're at risk of losing their license. So we don't want them to lose their license and go out of business. So it's kind of a quick fix for this particular business, and then next session we can take a broader look at the entire law, the 60-40 law.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Pappas, and to the respective chair of the committee, I would hope that we do so, because I know that there are a significant number of other establishments, in particular in a development in my city, that I'm sure would be interested in this kind of provision. So I hope that we do indeed take up this policy in the next session.
Further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 541. Senator Osmet.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this bill. I know a lot of us have received some of these emails, and in my district as well as around the Twin Cities, we have a number of new brew pubs, or more breweries, microbreweries, and the growler provision that I signed on to with Senator Pappas, and I appreciate her bringing that forward, helps them out. They are all small businesses. They are trying to make a go of it with a new industry, and by adding this provision in, we're able to actually let them continue to sell their product to a public that is, to say, thirsty for their business. So I appreciate the bill, and I'll be voting green. I would hope that all members will vote green. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 541. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, rise in support of this bill. So members, get your pen and paper. I'd like to invite you to the Winnebago Second Annual Brewfest on June 29th. Last year was their first annual Brewfest in this little community, and it was a sold-out event. And so because of this bill, they can do their second annual Brewfest. It's a big deal for Southern Minnesota, and I will be there, absolutely. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 541. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 541 its third reading.
Senate File 541, a bill for an act relating to liquor, regulating alcohol sales and distribution, authorizing various licenses.
Third reading. Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 541. Members will please vote. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 4 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
The next bill on special orders is number 101 on general orders, Senate File 769, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise in support of Senate File 769. This bill does three things. First, Sections 2, 4, 5, and 7 strengthen the changes made in the Omnibus Domestic Abuse Bill that was passed in 2010. That distinguished the crime of stalking from harassment. The changes in these sections of the bill update outdated language. Section 3 adds the crime of stalking to the definition of violent crime, which allows victims of violent crime to participate in criminal and civil court proceedings without the fear of employer retaliation for taking reasonable time off from their employment to attend those proceedings. Second, this bill provides victim protection by classifying identity information in the automated notification system as private data. Currently, protection of victim data for notification purposes only applies to post-conviction. What this change then does is it ensures victim data that's collected for that purpose remains private, non-public, and regardless of the type of facility or the type of system that's used to give that notification to the victim. Finally, this bill will establish a restitution working group to identify the inconsistencies in the process of ordering restitution payments throughout the state. The Department of Safety would establish the working group to study how restitution is currently being requested, ordered, and collected in Minnesota. Concerns about restitution are not new. But with our move to a unified court system, new court procedures regarding the collection of fines and restitution are necessary. Remember, this bill clarifies and restores stalking victim rights, protects victim notification data, and requires the Department of Public Safety to convene a restitution working group that will address the vocal frustrations on the part of victims who see restitution as only an empty promise. I ask for your support and for your vote for this bill. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 769, a bill for an act relating to public safety, clarifying certain statutory provisions relating to crime victim rights and programs, providing for a restitution working group.
The secretary will take the roll on Senate File 769. All members having voted, The secretary will close the roll. Don't close the roll. Secretary will unclose the roll. Is it too late? All right. Senator Hayden, how do you vote? Votes aye. There being 64 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 20 on general orders, House File 504, Senator Sparks. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 504 changes the way the Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association charges premiums to its member insurers and self-insurers to make certain that the premiums are adequate to cover all the benefits the WCRA expects to pay for seriously injured workers. The WCRA charges a premium for claims it expects to pay for an amount up to set in law called the pre-funded limit. Unfortunately, since 2003, the annual claim payments above the pre-funded limit have increased, and they're expected to increase in the future years. House File 504 is designed to assure that sufficient premiums are collected to pay all the claims and to avoid larger and more unpredictable costs to its members in future years. The approach has been endorsed by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, the Minnesota Self-Insurers Association, the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and also by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. With that, Madam President, I would ask members for their support.
Are there any questions? Senator Dumbs.
Madam President, thank you. Thank you, Madam President. As the minority lead in the Jobs, Agriculture, and the Rural Development Committee, I too support this bill. I think it's a good bill. I think it's going to get the WCA going in the right direction.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, would the author yield?
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Westrom.
Senator Sparks, question on the self-insurance. How does it affect the self-insurance pools that are able to put together their own self-insurance funds? And I assume this applies to them, and then I have a follow-up question.
Senator Sparks.
Madam President and Senator Westrom, it's my understanding that both the insurers and the self-insurers can choose from three different retention deductible rates, separate ranges that range anywhere from $470,000 all the way up to $1.8 million.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, the reason I ask Senator Sparks, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you further about this, but I've got a constituent who, her husband and their business, his business was part of a self-insurance fund. He passed away, and several years later they came back after her to pay a claim that they didn't even know about. And so, Senator Sparks, I'm not sure I can support this bill until I know that this doesn't exacerbate the current problem that is going on in the self-insurance pools, and so I just raised that for you to know about, but members to know about, because there are some glitches that need to be worked through, and I'm not sure if this answers the problem or not. I haven't had time to research that. I don't know if you know anything more about that or not, but to allow a pool to go back several years and go against a member for claims that they didn't even know were paid out, and they weren't even part of the business, is a concern to me, and that's what our current system is allowing to happen. And so I don't want to exacerbate the problem. Senator Sparks, if you know if this fixes any of those problems or exacerbates it, I'd be interested to know.
Senator Sparks.
I think, Madam President and Senator Westrom, obviously I want you to have some comfort. This is the reinsurance, and this is actually trying to make that solvent, and so that I don't think that your self-insurers would be affected by this. This is actually a bill that was brought forward by them, and it's a plan that was put into place by the legislature in 1979. And so I don't think that they would be affected by that, but I could certainly get you more information if that would give you some comfort level. And again, I did say it was agreed to upon by several of the organizations as well.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Just to concur, I mean, this is reinsurance for workman's compensation insurance. Basically, when they collect funds, there's basically a safety net over that. That's the reinsurance. They've not been collecting enough dollars there, and so what happens right now is they assess back to insurance companies for the shortfall. This is going to change that so they're able to collect adequate funds up front. So that there won't be big assessments on the backside. The benefit of that is the companies that are currently providing the coverage now are the ones that are paying the premium. The way it is right now, a company could go out of business, and then the rest of the companies are assessed for something that they should have been participating in. Hope that makes sense.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 504, a bill for an act relating to workers' compensation reinsurance, eliminating the Reinsurance Association pre-funded limit.
The Secretary will take the roll on House File 504. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We move now to the 13th order of business. I'm sorry, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 453 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
And this is your bill, Senator Peterson?
It is not.
Whose bill is it?
Madam President, Senate File 453 is chief authored by Senator Wieger.
Okay, members, it takes 41 votes to pass this motion. So we can have a discussion. Senator Peterson, do you want to speak to this motion?
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this morning in the Finance Committee, a very significant amendment was adopted by that committee that would delay the state's largest accountability system for educators by 1 year. This provision is, as I already stated, very significant and has statewide implications for every school district in your district. Is an issue that I bring forward mostly because this issue had absolutely zero debate in committee. An issue that absolutely is within the purview of the Committee on Education Policy, yet was slid into the finance bill after passing many of the provisions through the Committee on Education, through the E-12 division, and amended in a committee outside of jurisdiction over these policy matters. I think it's appropriate that the members of the Committee on Education Policy have this debate, considering, again, its statewide significance.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose the motion. action this morning would delay by 1 year the implementation for the program, and that's because of the lack of credible funding. This is the poster child of an unfunded mandate passed in the special session of 2011. Estimates have ranged up to $250 million or more, and the point is, let's do teacher evaluations right. We have discussed in committee about the need for adequately funding such evaluations. The School Boards Association noted that we're not even in the ballpark when $10 million had been suggested. What we suggest is that we roll out the pilots there, and there's money in the line item, $683,000 at line 65 for funding pilot programs. 10 districts are queued up for getting that. We also have funding, $750,000 for the biennium through the department to help with implementation, but we obviously aren't even close to knowing what the full amount would be. Should there be additional discussion in committee? At this point, we need to review what is going to be the impact from the pilots, get feedback from the various stakeholders, and when we are in the budget cycle for the next biennium, when for the effective date that's proposed, then we can hopefully do it right. There was reference to the fact of a federal waiver, and that can be addressed as well. We are strongly supportive of teacher evaluations, but to do it right, to pilot it, and these were major steps, again, that were unfunded in the special session of 2011, and that's why we made the adjustment.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Wieger. Just a couple of points. To your point about the significant unfunded mandate, to the Senator's point about it being the most significant unfunded mandate of the last biennium, I would say all the more reason why that debate, if it was so significant, why that debate should have happened within the Committee of Jurisdiction over Policy in that area. Would Senator Wieger yield to a question?
Senator Wieger, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Peterson.
Senator Wieger, was the policy decision or the policy provision to delay the teacher evaluation system by 1 year heard in any of the education committees?
Senator Wieger.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, there wasn't a formal proposal, though there was a great deal of discussion in overviews and about the lack of funding.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I think it's important, again, to recognize the answer there was that it wasn't heard. And the reason that I hand out, I had a couple of things handed out here regarding, you'll see at the top of the page, both are titled ESEA flexibility. In other words, that was the state's NCLB waiver. And the reason that that amendment being adopted in finance is so significant, members, is that the state of Minnesota agreed to a waiver, to a set of waiver requirements with the U.S. Department of Education. And as you can see in the grids that I passed out, what those requirements are under the U.S. Department of Education is that we fully implement our program in the 14-15 biennium. And with the 1 year delay, we will not be compliant with the U.S. Department of Education. Now, I don't bring this up to debate the merits of the amendment. I don't think that's appropriate in debating the motion, but I do bring it up to point out the error in this process, which is that we, on the fly, amended a significant bill with a significant policy provision that does not obviously recognize federal rule or state rule as was agreed to by the Department of Education. And those types of things happen when you try at the 11th hour to amend a major finance bill with a major policy provision that hasn't been vetted. Members, if we were to adopt this provision eventually and make it law, the state of Minnesota would no longer be compliant with the NCLB waiver, which would, I assure you, be very detrimental to our K-12 system, to the Department of Education and the mission that they're on currently. And it's all the more reason why this debate should have happened and should happen in the Committee of Jurisdiction. And I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call's been requested. Senator, excuse me, we have people in line. So Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Peterson made a very eloquent case. I just will underscore that. I serve on the Finance Committee this morning, and these are some of the discussion that we had. I didn't get into the details of the No Child Left Behind waiver, and et cetera. I argued on the merits of that was not a question which should have been before the Finance Committee. That was a strictly policy-related change. There's no money associated with it. We are not tracking a savings in the state budget as a result. We did have, in the K-12 budget division, we did have testifiers who alluded to the fact that there are costs for them associated with it, but it was not in the context of making this change. It was really kind of more in the context of a, not to sound pejorative, but kind of a complaint. This proposed change, as a proposed change, did not get a hearing. I serve on both the K-12 policy and budget, did not get a hearing in the policy committee. This is absolutely a significant and dramatic policy change that has very significant implications for the state of Minnesota. The policy committee never discussed this proposed change. The budget committee never discussed the proposed change as a proposal to change something. It was alluded to in testimony, and that's the closest we got there in the budget division. Excuse me, members. This absolutely is something that needs to be talked through. The policy implications has to be talked through with our policy experts. Those are the members of the K-12 policy committee. That's where this discussion belongs. It is a proper motion. It is a good motion. It's something that we should have done in the Finance Committee right away when we adopted the amendment. And if this is not successful on the floor, I'm sure we'll have some more discussions when the Finance Committee reconvenes tonight at 7 o'clock. But members, I strongly urge a yes vote. A policy change of this magnitude is something that the Policy Committee should be talking about. We do, as Senator Cohen kind of talked about this morning in Finance Committee, we do occasionally tinker around the edges, and there's a little bit of a gray area on making policy changes in the Finance Committee. And I understand that, and I acknowledge that, and I don't necessarily have a problem with some tinkering around the edges. But this is dramatic. When you're talking about no longer complying with a federal waiver and potentially, likely, putting the state back under all of the original No Child Left Behind requirements, that is a significant, dramatic implication for one of the largest and most important things that the state of Minnesota does, and that's the K-12 education system.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I do not serve on the Education Finance Committee, but I do serve on the Education Policy Committee, and I know there was significant debate over this issue. I don't know the exact reasons that things got changed in the Finance Committee, but there's no doubt that this is something that should be dealt with in policy. And then I would further point out that many times in various policy committees that I serve on, and in the ed policy in particular, I have asked for fiscal notes, or I have asked for some information on the fiscal implications of bills, and it has been denied to me under the theory that, well, this is a policy committee and we don't deal with finance here. Then we send the bill to finance, and then the finance committee changed things on the policy front because apparently there's a finance issue. So it's sort of a catch-22. If you're on the policy committee, you don't get to consider the finance. It goes to the finance committee, and then they can change the policy we passed for fiscal considerations. So I stand in strong support of Senator Peterson's motion and would ask for a green vote.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The Senator Nenow, Thompson, and Peterson made great points. And I keep going back to the same thing I've been going back to several times now. This is process. The law and the rules mean something. We just had a new permanent rules issued. Went through a long process to get those written and printed. They mean something, right? That little pink book we all got today, that means something, Madam President. And this process of going to the Finance Committee and taking the K-12 policy issue and dropping it in behind people's backs shouldn't stand. This is a serious policy issue. We had, as Senator Thompson alluded to, we had significant debate in the policy committee about this issue. At one time, the first vote failed. The second time they brought it back, they had significant changes to it. This is tantamount to saying they want to kill this bill. They are delaying this legislation from being enacted, a bill that was signed by the governor just last year. I know it's difficult, it's controversial, but there's certainly no way to conduct our business. This is about process. We always hear about process. If the process and the rules and laws don't mean anything, then let's get rid of them. But this needs a process so it can be properly vetted and heard by the citizens. And this circumvents that process. That is why we have laws. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. You know, waivers are difficult to come by from the feds. And I stand in support of Senator Peterson's motion to re-refer this to the policy committee. As the lead on policy, I can tell you that it is essential that we have a look at what the ramifications would be of the change that was added in the finance committee. We need to know what are the ramifications if, in fact, we were to lose the waiver that we obtained from the feds, which was predicated on the assumption that the legislation that was passed last session, signed into law by Governor Dayton, was in fact in place. That's what we said in our waiver application. I think it would be foolhardy for this body to put that waiver in jeopardy by not fully vetting the implications of the move of the amendment that was made in the Finance Committee today. We must do our due diligence, and we definitely need to get some answers about how the waiver would be impacted from the feds. I urge a green vote.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I have a parliamentary inquiry.
State your inquiry.
I believe, Madam President, that I understand you said that there would 41 votes were required for this motion, and I would be questioning under what rule you would state that, because under 5-1 it does say after the committee deadline for action on a bill, which we have not reached the committee deadline for this bill. I believe that's this Friday, because it is an omnibus bill. Is my understanding. So I was asking for your reference on that, Madam President.
Thank you for that inquiry. Your point is well taken. 34 votes.
Madam President.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, this has been a lot of fun. And I just want to offer a perspective. I like history. And we had discussion in the Finance Committee about the process, and was there a discussion in the Education Policy Committee? Actually, in the Finance Committee, it relayed more to the discussion in Senator Wieger's division. But I have to note, and there were folks on the committee, and as they often say, good friends of mine, who kept on quoting me. And I was trying to think, what were they quoting me about? And then I realized it was my discussion relative to 2 years ago, I believe, in a debate relative to former Senator Perry's State Department's bill. So I want to do my little bit of history and would note that on March 26th of last year, just a little over a year ago, we had a bill on the floor of the Senate that dealt with the school payment shift. And one of the concerns was that there was a provision in that bill, and I want to make sure I understand what the bill was, that it had 1% of all state general fund appropriations being used to pay off the shift. And the provision that was debated on the Senate floor on March 26th was from, I know members will be shocked, a Senator Nino bill. And this was Senate File 2592, which was introduced on March 21st. Heard on the Senate floor March 26th, and was not heard in any committees prior to the Finance Committee meeting. So I understand the concerns on the part of the minority, but just a little over a year ago, Senator Nino, who is a good senator, honorable person, I really, really like him a lot, and he had this bill that somehow magically appeared in the Finance Committee, and there was no discussion, apparently, no discussion whatsoever prior to the bill coming in front of the Finance Committee. No discussion in the Education Policy Committee, No discussion apparently in former Senator Olson's finance, K-12 finance committee. No discussion, unlike Senator Wieger's bill and that provision, which apparently did have some discussion. It might have been limited discussion, as I understand it. I don't serve on Senator Wieger's division, but there was some discussion. So I really enjoyed myself in my committee this morning as my history was being discussed, and I just thought, for the sake of historical accuracy, we'd discuss the entire history.
Point of order.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Rule 5.1 provides for recall from a committee that the body here can vote on it, but only with the concurrence of the chief author of the bill. I wonder if the senator who made the motion, if they're moving under Rule 5.1, then this whole consideration is out of order since Senator Wieger has not concurred with this.
Is that that's a point of order? Senator Wieger, are you in concurrence with recalling the bill?
Madam President, as I initially said, I oppose the motion.
Then I stand corrected by Senator Fischbach, and then I stand corrected by Senator Latz. Senator Fischbach, did you want to comment at all? Because we missed the with the concurrence of the chief author under 5.1.
Madam President, I believe then this would be a simple motion that Senator Peterson is making to move whether we use 5.1 or not, or excuse me, or Rule 5. It is a motion to move a bill. And that would take a simple majority.
So, Senator Fischbach, you were correct on the 34 votes, but the clause at the beginning of 5.1 requires the concurrence of the chief author.
Madam President?
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I would then inquire what motion would you accept for Senator Peterson to move? I think we all understand that this is without the consideration of the author, but I guess my understanding was that Senator Peterson was making a motion, which I believe members are allowed to do.
Right. Senator Fischbach, as I read 5.1, the recall motion has to have the concurrence of the chief author. Without the concurrence of the chief author, then the motion is out of order. Are there any other motions? Then we move to Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm going to make a motion. Madam President, I move that this body direct the Senate Finance Committee to refer the bill out of that committee and to the Committee on K-12 Policy.
That motion requires the concurrence of the chief author of the bill. Senator Wieger, do you concur with that motion?
Madam President, no.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, advice. The motion would not compel the committee to do that. This would be a direction from the full Senate to the Finance Committee. It would not mandate that they take that action. It would be direction from this body suggesting that that is the next course of action for that committee. The Finance Committee could refuse. The Finance Committee could send it back to the floor, to taxes, to whatever. But this would be a sense of the Senate telling the Finance Committee that they should send that bill to the K-12 Policy Committee. It would be non-binding.
Madam President, advice?
Senator Latz.
Senator Ninau is moving that the Senate kind of give its own feelings about what the Finance Committee ought to do with the bill, and hope the Finance Committee might consider that favorably. Senator Ninau's on the Finance Committee. We're scheduled to meet at 7 o'clock. I suggest the more appropriate place to do it is in the committee.
Senator Ninau, I think you could do a point of personal privilege and express your opinion, your desire on the part of the Senate.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate Senator Latz's recommendation. I'm aware that I serve on the Finance Committee. It would give me, and I will make that motion in the Finance Committee, but it will give me a much stronger argument if the sense of the Senate is that is where the bill should be sent. Now, admittedly, if this motion fails, I will have a much weaker argument. But, Madam President, I would hope that the members of the full Senate would realize that a policy implication of this magnitude really should be reviewed by the Policy Committee and send that recommendation to the Finance Committee.
Senator Nina, once again, you can't make that motion without concurrence of the chief author of the bill. So your motion is out of order. Moving on now to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I would just remind you that you're all invited to the second gathering of the Purple Caucus. We'll be having breakfast at 7:30 in Capitol Room 318, just down, up and over. 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, members of the Higher Education Committee, we will convene in G15. There are several people who drove many hours, some as many as 9, to present their bonding proposals. So we'll meet briefly and hear the proposals where people drove to be there. So again, we'll be meeting in G15.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Miller all day, Senator Fischbach from 1:30 to 1:55 p.m., Senator Sharon from 3:40 to 3:50 p.m., Senator Limmer from 4:20 until the end of session. Are there any other announcements? Senator
Madam Bonner. President, I'm sorry I was not clear. We'll be meeting immediately following session so that we can wrap up quickly.
Any other announcements? Senator Laurie.
Madam President, the Health and Human Services Finance Division will be meeting in 15 minutes.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senate Finance will meet at, putting aside my threat of 7 o'clock earlier, we'll try to meet at 5:45.
Oh. No dinner. Senator Dibble.
Madam President.
Sorry, Senator Ninau.
Madam President, point of order. The Finance Committee had a motion to recess to a time certain. Is that changeable arbitrarily?
Advice, Senator Latz.
Madam President, the motion, in fact, I don't even think there was a formal motion in the Finance Committee. My recollection is the chair put us in recess. He selected a time, and my recollection of the rules is that he can change that time without any concurrence from anyone else.
Madam Chair,
Sandy, no.
Yes, I do stand corrected. It was not a motion. It was a recess to a time certain. My question is, can that be changed arbitrarily? And Madam President,
Sandy, no.
To that also, that has been publicly noticed to that way. It's on the website, and we did receive an email with that.
Madam Chair, advice.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, all Senator Cohen did right now was make an announcement. So any parliamentary inquiry as to whether the Finance Committee
has been properly reconvened at, say, 5:45 would have to be taken up in the Finance Committee at that time. That question isn't properly before this body for your consideration.
Under 12.3, it does say, to the extent practical, a committee should provide the public with at least 3 days' notice. In this case, the committee had only recessed. It hadn't even adjourned. So the committee is still technically in session. So your point of order is not well taken. Any other announcements? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to rise to a point of personal privilege.
State your point.
Thank you, Madam President. As many of you know, I was in Boston yesterday, and I'm happy to report that all of the Minnesotans that we're aware of who are participating in the marathon made it safely and soundly, and they're safe and well. But I did want to take this opportunity to say thank you to everyone for expressing their concern for me and well wishes to my friends, including our former colleague, State Representative Larry Hosh, who is out there with. I also wanted to take this moment to just contemplate and remember that these moments in life are a reminder of how precious life is, how important the people we love in our lives are. And it was also a reminder, members, of the fact that despite our differences here, at the end of the day, we really care about each other. The sad irony is that many of the runners who were running yesterday were running in memory of the victims of Sandy Hook, and many others were running to raise money for charitable purposes for other people. It was also a commemoration of Founders Day in Massachusetts, which was recalling the earliest days of our country in the days of the Revolutionary War, with military troops who were hiking along the entire route of the marathon alongside us. So, Madam President, I would like to ask for a moment of silence to honor the courage and patriotism of those first responders who ran straight into that disaster with no regard for their own personal safety, to honor those in the military who lay down their lives every day for all of us, but especially, of course, for the family of those and those who we lost and were injured. I want to thank Governor Dayton, who has ordered the flags of Minnesota to be flown at half staff from today until Saturday. And I want to wish Godspeed to the men and women who are investigating this tragedy, so that justice is brought as quickly as possible.
The Senate will take a moment of silence. Thank you. Are there any other announcements? Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. State Department and Vets Budget Division, if it isn't obvious, is canceled for today. We're going to meet again at our regular time Thursday. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Wednesday, April 17th, 11 a.m.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.